Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow, did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann, let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Jason Kelly. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the world of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Bloomberg Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, only on Bloomberg Radio.
It wasn't a rock.
I have to say, I did not know what Reggie and Sam were going to pick for the intro music here. Rock Lobster, little B-52s, bringing it in. Kim Lobdrup is here with us. He is the CEO of Red Lobster, not Rock Lobster. He's based down in Orlando, Florida, but he's here with us in New York today. Kim, great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
And you brought some of your famous biscuits, so
Jason,
you know, you're
sold.
Jason
said he was not doing this interview unless biscuits arrived. So thankfully you brought them.
But talk about the business right now, because you know Taylor and I have been looking forward to this conversation in part because the size and scope of your enterprise gives you such a window into the consumer and his or her habits and willingness to spend money right now. So how are they feeling?
Sure. Well, the consumer is pretty healthy right now. Red Lobster just celebrated its fifth anniversary as an independent company. We've been making major investments to give consumers what they want today, which is higher quality, greater value, greater convenience, and they want social responsibilities. We've been making sure all of our seafood is traceable, sustainable, and responsibly sourced, and we're at 100% today. We just finished a year in which same restaurant sales were positive. We grew EBITDA very strongly, and we're at the point of opening restaurants again. Our sense is that most consumers are actually really, you know, pretty healthy these days, with record low unemployment. And so we're selling lots of ultimate feasts and things like that. But at the same time, we recognize there are significant portions of society that are under financial stress. And because of that, we're pursuing what we call a barbell strategy. Mm. So we also have weekday wins up to 6 p.m. on weekdays with some incredible meals for $15, including endless shrimp on Mondays. We just introduced some seafood lovers lunches for under $10. So we're working both ends of the barbell, recognizing different consumers are in different places.
One of the things that you touched on was convenience for the consumer. When I think of Red Lobster, frankly, I think of going into a physical store, restaurant, and sitting there. But you've partnered to help bring delivery service to the customer. That was much needed, long awaited, or are you still trying to get ahead of that as the customer anticipates wanting a delivery dinner? Perhaps
convenience has been the fastest growing. Convenience has been incredibly important to us. In the past year, our off-premise business actually grew 55%, and that's been accelerating throughout the year. The current run rate is even higher. What drove that in the fiscal year that just ended was you know, improving our takeout packaging, improving our website, adding a call center, partnering with Uber Eats, Grubhub, and DoorDash. Mm-hmm. We have also just signed a deal with Postmates, where that'll go live in about a month. We just signed a deal with EasyCater. At the end of this month, 85% of our system will go live with what we call hybrid delivery, meaning you order on our website, you get delivery via DoorDash, you save $2 to $3 in delivery fees compared to ordering on somebody else's website, and you get credit on My Red Lobster Award so you can earn points for free food in the future. We're very excited about that. We're also experimenting, working to open our first ghost kitchen to try a delivery only unit, and we think that has potential.
Talk to us about sort of the movement toward healthier eating. Seafood obviously is a centerpiece of a lot of people's desire there. And certainly for me personally, it feels like the healthier option. How do you cater to that and make sure you're keeping up with those sorts of wants and needs?
Right. I'm personally very health conscious, and I am thrilled to see consumers in general becoming more health conscious. I'm pleased that I think we meet that need exceedingly well. Harvard School of Public Health did a meta study and concluded, and I quote, "Seafood is likely the most important food one can consume for good health."
Interesting.
I believe we've actually just introduced a new line we call Power Bowls that are designed to be the ultimate healthy solution. If you want to eat healthy, I recommend you visit a Red Lobster and order a summer Power Bowl. It's a bunch of superfoods, and you can get your choice of seafood on top of it.
Quickly, we talk about the health of the U.S. consumer. How is the international consumer?
It varies by country. Certainly, the U.S. is performing much better than most international markets, but we believe there's still very significant international opportunity. In the past year, we've expanded into China, the Philippines, and Guam, and are off to great starts on all three of those markets.
Who's your biggest competitor?
You know, we are Red Lobster is an extraordinarily unique concept. It is the only restaurant concept designed specifically to meet the needs, and we say to delight seafood lovers. And we have the highest share of our segment of any restaurant brand in any category. I think part of the beauty of Red Lobster is we are so unique and don't really have any direct national competitors.
All right. You're competing for people's time and their wallet, I guess.
Yes.
All right. Very good. Kim Lobtrup is the CEO of Red Lobster. He's got a fascinating background. We didn't even get into that across the food and dining industry. You'll have to come back and visit with us. Celebrating the 5th anniversary of Red Lobster's independence. The restaurant goes back to 1968 down in Lakeland, Florida, right outside of Orlando. He's based down there, but he was here with us in New York today. So, Taylor, when I was reading in on this next guest, it really did strike me, note the song, Weird Science, that there are some cases where science fiction just becomes science. And I feel like that's the case with this company. It's called Inscripto. We have the CEO joining us on the phone from Boulder, Colorado. That's Kevin Ness. Kevin, thank you so much for joining Taylor and myself.
Thank you for hosting me.
All right. So, tell us what this is all about, because I feel like we've been talking for a bit of time about genetic engineering, sort of gene by gene, as it were. But you're talking about something on a bigger scale. Help us understand the scope of this.
Yeah, thank you. So we're a University of Colorado spin-out, founded about 4 years ago. And we focused on really kind of unlocking the power of biology. When you look at the world of CRISPR today, I'm sure some of you listening have heard of CRISPR. My mom even reaches out to me and says, hey, what's this CRISPR buzz? It's a whole new technology to edit genes. However, that capability is somewhat limited in nature. We wanted to actually build a platform that could really unlock the full scale of the genome, orders of magnitude improvements and a few dimensions that matter. And when this happens, you can actually start to use biology to solve some of the greatest problems facing our society.
Well,
excited about this.
One thing I loved about your website is you talk about how we feed, fuel, and heal humanity. So specifically with this new technology, what are you hoping to achieve?
So really, we want to give researchers the tools that they desperately need so that you can use biology to do exactly what you said, feed, fuel, and heal humanity. to do that, we need to move past the current inadequacies of the CRISPR-based space. So what I'm proud to announce that we are launching at the upcoming world-leading synthetic biology conference in October called SynBioBeta is really what we've been working on the last 4 years. And it is the world's first benchtop platform to go after scalable digital genome engineering. That's a mouthful, but it requires a mouthful to put the capabilities in biologists' hands so that you can start to go after a whole diverse set of markets. We're talking a broad part of the both U.S. and global economy here. Whole new classes of therapeutics, helping solve the energy crisis, helping develop more stable food supplies for the planet, whole new classes of materials that are sustainable, help deal with climate change. I mean, these are big, bold changes to the economy that's coming, and it's all going to be fueled by biology.
And so, Kevin, as you look across this landscape and you look at what's possible, and you've just described some of what's possible, I've got to ask you about the clear sort of ethical questions that come up in terms of how will we ensure that people are using this for good and using it in a way that folks are comfortable with?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And anything of this power requires responsibility. And Script is committed to kind of leading that initiative. So the first product offering that we're putting out works on editing large libraries of microbes. So the whole, you know, human gene editing CRISPR babies component is not an aspect of what we're touching at all with this first launch. Within the microbe space, there are concerns in biosecurity. And so Inscript is taking a proactive initiative to put a whole bunch of controls and kind of countermeasures at multiple layers within our technology, both at the software, the instrument, and the reagent level to ensure that it is used correctly.
You know, here at Bloomberg, Kevin, we're always focused on the financials as well. Talk to me about the fundraising environment and the type of investors that have expressed interest in Inscripta.
Yeah, so there's a whole new flood of entrepreneurs and VC dollars going into the synthetic biology space, and I think it's justified. You know, if you look at the last, two decades, really, of kind of funding in the biology, you know, we've all heard about the Human Genome Project. Government put in $3.85 billion to fund this. Bill Clinton stood on the podium, cover of Nature, cover of Science, and we sequenced the human genome in 2003. And that $3.85 billion generated about $770 billion of value kind of for the U.S. economy. Huge return on investment, very important for society. And that's just reading, okay? What's coming next is the moving from reading biology to writing it.
Right.
And Inscripta's focus has been to go after the top investors within this space. So Venrock, for example, we just announced a few quarters ago a recent Series C completion at $105.5 million with Venrock leading us in one of the top VCs in the Valley.
Kevin, we're unfortunately going to have to leave it there. So interesting and eager to get an update as you move along. Congratulations on the big announcement. Clearly more to come in this space. A lot of big questions and a lot of huge opportunity here in the world of synthetic biology. Really appreciate the time.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Meet Gary. Gary's about to become an Einstein in an instant.
Whoa, Einstein hair. I like it.
That's right, Gary, because you're using Salesforce powered by Einstein AI to connect data, predict business trends, generate personalized content, and wow customers.
I do feel a lot smarter.
Because you're not just Gary anymore. You're Gary, empowered by Einstein AI.
Did you hear that, team? I'm an Einstein.
Oh, can I get a selfie?
The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
All right, one of our favorite guests back with us, Vinny Catalano. He is Chief Investment Officer of Redmount Capital Partners, co-founder and member of Adriatic Capital Partners. Vinny, you always do such a good job picking your music. Tell me a story. A lot of great stories out there. A lot of fascinating twists and turns, I feel like, in the market right now. What do you make of it?
Marking time, sideways action. It kind of makes me think of Ernest Hemingway's quote from The Sun Also Rises, which is, how did so-and-so become bankrupt? It was gradually, then suddenly. It's kind of a, this is what it sort of feels like. If you know the difference between market tops and market bottoms, the thing that you want to be aware of in a market top is this distributional type of action that we seem to be getting of late. Not yet. We're not there. It's not at the breakdown. We haven't crossed moving averages and all of those kind of things. And there are plenty of reasons to be, you know, bullish or bearish. But until the market action does that, the setup phase seems to be where we are right now.
I wonder, you know, we sit here 24 hours ago and we talk about trade tensions and every sector is down 1%, with the major averages off anywhere from 1 to 1.5%. And then you come in 24 hours later and all it takes is one tweet to turn things around and now we're up 1-2%.
Sure.
Do you get nervous about the strength or the faith in this rally, given it's based, some people would say, not on fundamentals, but on a tweet here or there?
I think a lot of the market is based upon the availability of investable capital that professional investors have and the absence of alternatives that are there. More money has gone to the alternative space. Jason and I have talked about this before, private equity mainly. But in the public markets, it's a lot like, okay, well, if the money's not being taken out and we don't have this cascading down in values just yet, well, the music's playing and you have to dance. And unfortunately, that tends to make bad markets kind of be bad for a longer period of time. I mean, we are, you know, significantly overvalued, despite what some say. And so if you use any metric, you're going to come up with an overvalued market. But, hey, that's what happens from time to time. Every so many years, this occurs. And then every now and then you got the backstop.
Right.
What's the backstop? It's, you know, Jerome Powell, you know, hey, you guys need some help over there? Sure, I'll come in.
Right.
And then the market gets bailed out again and again, which I think encourages bad behavior both economically and from a financial point of view.
Well, let's talk about behavior for a second, because I know one of the things that you think about a lot and we've talked about before is sort of the behavioral finance aspect to the markets. You've made a study of it. Sure. As you look around, especially at a market like this, and I know that this is interesting to Taylor as well, we're all human beings. The market is made up of human beings, and human behavior inevitably creeps in here. What does human behavior look like in a market like this?
Well, the market efficient theory would say au contraire.
Right,
it's not that way. It's that we're dispassionate. We don't have regret. We're not concerned about other factors, which is complete nonsense. Daniel Kahneman, Erwin Chorsky, and others have shown over the years with significant studies that that's not the case. And so, yeah, you know, the individual dynamic comes into play. Markets do get overdone. There is regret. That's a part of the dynamic. There's a whole range of other behavioral finance issues, heuristics that, frankly, investors really should familiarize themselves with for themselves, and mainly for how institutional investors who are the market, how they do what they do, how they behave.
Well, this is a treat because this was level 3 portfolio management, CFA, behavioral finance,
yeah, it's
curriculum.
Kind of that stuff. Yeah, yeah.
So talk to me just a little bit more about that, because we learn about recency bias,
sure,
conservatism bias. What would you say is one of the biases most at work right now? Is it overconfidence that we're going to be fine and we'll continue to reach new highs? Is it recency bias? I think about 2008 and get scared and pull back. What force do you see at work most?
I think there's two. One of them is exactly the one that you just mentioned. The first one there, overconfidence. Mm-hmm. There really is this belief in institutions that, and the belief in the ability of institutional investors to play a game of chicken. You know, they'll stay in the game and they'll be able to, you know, alpha males can, you know, they'll dodge the bullet. They'll swerve the car right at the last second, et cetera. And that works until it doesn't work. It's, you know, Ernest Hemingway again, gradually and then suddenly. It works until it stops working at that point in time. And that's how we get into trouble time and again. The other one I would go back to is regret. Regret because of the fact that you don't want to be the one that ends up losing. You don't want to be the one that trails. You don't want to be the one that somebody else has succeeded and you haven't. And that leads to, I love it, Doug Cass brings this up all the time, groupthink.
Right.
Instead of groupthink, it's groupthink. You know, everybody following one another. Why? Because I'm a money manager. Jason's a money manager. If I do what Jason's doing, I'm likely not to get fired. And I'm likely not to lose clients, because where the client's going to go? They're going to go to Jason? Well, he's doing basically the same thing that I am. Unfortunately, that does sound like a cynical perspective. I apologize for that. I believe in being skeptical, not cynical, but geez, after so many years, it just seems like that's the way it kind of plays out.
And so when you see something like protests at the airport in Hong Kong.
It doesn't matter.
So are you able to just look past at that?
Even
when you have the President of the United States tweeting about it, tweeting about
tweet
troops
away.
Amassing at the border, you just look past it.
Yeah, tweetily-dee, tweet, you know, President Tweety Bird can go ahead and tweet all that he wants.
Yeah.
Professional investors are concerned about the inputs into the valuation models. Not to get too wonky, the discounted cash flow model, CFA.
You could never get too wonky for Taylor. It's literally impossible.
We sold 2 minutes and 27 seconds to go discount cash flow.
Yeah, discounted cash flow. Yeah, exactly. Earnings, interest rates, and the risk factor. And so much of that is subjective, too. And you know, so that becomes a dynamic that becomes very difficult. It's not that hard and fast, dispassionate, no behavioral finance. It's just, we'll plug the numbers in. It's nonsense, not the way it works.
And do you make sure that you use those valuations, those fundamental valuations and models to protect against some of the regret bias that you were talking about, which is you hold on to your sellers too long because you don't want to get a paper loss. You sell your winners too soon because you want to lock in your gain. Mm-hmm. And you have to learn that if you're losing, you sell. Mm-hmm. How does that work in your world?
The way I approach it is I like to look at what the others are doing. It's a lot like being in the room and watching the behavior of the crowd and then try and make a determination from that in terms of how I should behave. John Maynard Keynes quote about the beauty contest, that sort of thing. That's the way that I approach it with that. As far as the actual decision making, it's a little bit more in the area of where sector tilting I want to be, you know, overweight one sector, underweight another sector. What thematic plays do I want to go with? Cybersecurity, water resources, which ones don't I want to be in? Those kind of things. That's a little bit more with the application of what you're talking about in terms of the decision making. But I'm using it more as far as how the market behavior is functioning,
right,
and what should I do or not do? Should I follow the crowd, don't follow the crowd, that sort of thing.
All right. Vinny Catalano, we're going to leave it there. Chief Investment Officer at Redmount Capital Partners, co-founder and member of Adriatic Capital Partners, based in Newport Beach and in New York City. What's better than that? But he's here with us in our Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studio today. All right. So we have been watching very closely, as Taylor mentioned at the top of the show, really from the moment we all got up this morning here in the U.S., everything that's been going on in Hong Kong. We've been watching it for quite some time, and it was the center of our discussion yesterday with Andy Brown. He's the editorial director for Bloomberg New Economy, back with us because we love his perspective, because it really took a turn today. And Andy, you know, just to remind everyone, he lived in Hong Kong for a time. You really grew up there in a lot of ways. So you know this city intimately. Help us understand what we saw today, both from the protests really sort of breaking out in at a new level at the airport, as well as President Trump weighing in with a tweet talking about troops at the border.
Right. Well, that tweet was really confusing. It's not at all clear what he was talking about. Does he have new, credible information that, as he says, Chinese troops are heading to the border? Or is he repeating what we already know? Chinese state media have been broadcasting now for the past week images of troops massing in Shenzhen right across the border. We've seen pictures of troop carriers in convoy rumbling down highways. This has been all part of China's intimidation tactics aimed at getting the protesters off the streets. Very sharp warnings from Beijing. So quite what he had in mind. But, you know, frankly, he's been all over the map on Hong Kong. What you might expect out of the White House now would be a set of consistent messages, of principled messages about the protests, about ways that these protests might be diffused, messages about what the United States would do in the event that China went in across the border, sent in the People's Liberation Army. And instead, you know, you had, for instance, a week or two ago, you had the president coming out and talking about the protests as riots, which is borrowing the Chinese language and essentially saying this is none of our business. China's going to fix this as it sees fit.
One of the issues, though, because you talk about messaging being clear on, you know, what the U.S. or other nations could do. Is there anything we could do if China really did decide to move troops in? Is there anything we could do?
Beyond spelling out what the costs would be? No. Hong Kong belongs to China. And if China feels that, as it does, that its sovereignty is being threatened, that its authority over Hong Kong is being questioned, and its credibility is thus being called into question by these protesters, they will move in.
And so, what are we to make of what happens next in terms of how businesses start to react, how citizens start to react? As we've talked so much with you before, I mean, this is a financial hub. This is a place that is filled, candidly, with expats. You know, you were once one of those people. What do we expect to see next, almost tonally?
It's hard to know where public opinion is going right now. Obviously, you had 2 million people coming out onto the streets of Hong Kong against this extradition law. Huge public support or public demand that Carrie Lam, the leader in Hong Kong, withdraw this bill. It hasn't happened. You know, these two protests that you've had on consecutive days at the airport have been a terrible mistake by the protesters. The disruption of public transport is not popular. It makes people very irritable, very annoyed. They don't want to see Hong Kong descending into chaos.
Right.
And you had that from Carrie Lam. She came out today, who's the Hong Kong leader, with a real sense of foreboding, as though she knows what's going to happen. And she talked about Hong Kong being on the edge of the abyss. Now, having said that, you've also had today doctors, nurses, orderlies walking off the job in protest against police brutality. In recent days, you've had bankers coming out to show their support for democracy, for the demands of the protesters. They want an independent inquiry into police violence. You've had civil servants coming out. So the support in general for the students has been broad-based and widespread.
Quickly here, one thing that made my eyebrows raised a little bit was China's biggest lender, the investment banking arm of that, put out a strong sell warning on Cathay Pacific shares. So basically, you know, downgrading them, let's say, from a buy or hold to a sell to a strong sell. Is that China's way of meddling, of influencing, at least in this case, in the financial markets and shares of Cathay Pacific?
Sure. China is using what leverage it can. And in this case, it's putting pressure on foreign on businesses in Hong Kong. Cathay Pacific is effectively the Hong Kong flag carrier, putting pressure on these businesses to get their staff into line. So what it said to Cathay Pacific is, you need to give us names of your crew who are flying into China or even flying over China to make sure that they don't include people who have been taking part in the protest. And Cathay Pacific absolutely has to comply with this order.
Right. It's amazing. Well, many, many twists and turns we feel like are ahead in this story. Andy, you have been such a trooper for us and a real provider of wisdom on everything that's happening. We really appreciate it. Andy Brown is the editorial director of Bloomberg New Economy, longtime resident of Hong Kong, student of China and U.S. relations as well. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com. You can also listen to our radio show every weekday at 2 p.m. Eastern, only on Bloomberg Radio.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow, did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann, let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.